I feel much more comfortable taking investors who invest, you know, invest in a lot of brands, and they know that 9 out of 10 of them are going to fail, and they're banking on that one to override all the rest. And while I want to be that one, I want to try my damn hardest to do that, they know the risks involved and they're used to doing this.
Laurel Orley is the co-founder of Daily Crunch Snacks, a uniquely crunchy and tasty treat made from sprouted nuts. Launched in March of 2020, Daily Crunch has grown from a hyper-local brand in Nashville and Detroit to a nationally recognized brand available in a CVS near you. Coming up, Laurel shares what she wished she knew before becoming an entrepreneurista. The out-of-the-box thinking that landed Daily Crunch in CVS stores. How to connect with influencers to market your brand. And finally, the hardest part of being an entrepreneurista. This is the Entrepreneurista Podcast, presented by Socialfly.
It's the best business meeting you'll ever have, with must-hear real-life looks at how leading women in business are getting it done.
And what it takes to build and grow a successful company.
It's beyond the gram.
With no filters,
no limits,
and plenty of surprises. So many of us have ideas for businesses, but often we don't start them because we either don't know where to start or we feel like we have to have absolutely everything figured out before we just get started in our business. And after mentoring so many women over the years, I have always shared the advice to just get started. So we've created this new segment on our show in partnership with Square for you all to hear the actionable steps that so many of our entrepreneuristas have taken when they were ready to turn their idea to launch a business into a reality, so that you can see that it is absolutely possible for you to just get started too. Laurel, I am so excited to be here with you today and hear all about your entrepreneurista founder journey and story. Take me back to the early days when you had this initial idea to start Daily Crunch and you knew you just had to start. What did you do first?
Well, when I'm hearing this, it sounds like eons and eons ago that I had this idea, but it really was not even 4 years ago. I feel like entrepreneur life, it's like 1 year equals seven.
They were like 10 or 10.
or many more than that. But I came from working on huge corporate brands. Like I worked on the Unilever business for 13 years on brands like the Dove campaign for Real Beauty, Hellman's Mayonnaise, Lipton, Suave. I also worked on Diageo and Hasbro Toys. So these were brands, iconic flagship brands that people know, with massive budgets, and corporate was my career and my way of life. My Aunt Diane learned about sprouting almonds and nuts when she went to India over 18 years ago, and she was just gifting bags, her sprouted nuts, to friends and family over the years. And as I was deciding on my next step with my career, I approached Diane, and that's how this all started.
So now you have this idea and you're like, okay, let's go in and do it. What were some of those first steps that you took to turn your idea into a business?
Yeah, well, first of all, my husband's an entrepreneur. He's in the hotel industry. When I was in my 20s doing corporate, and he, right about a year before we got married, we're engaged, he came home one day and he said, I quit my job. And Philip, who was his friend and now his business partner of almost 15 years, he's like, Philip and I quit our jobs and we're going to start our own company. And I was like, oh my God, that's the worst decision ever. Like, how?
This was right before you got married?
About a year before we got married.
Okay.
I couldn't understand. It made no sense to me. I said, why would you not want to be corporate? Like, why would you not want to get a paycheck every 2 weeks? And I actually was very anti-entrepreneur. And it really was like I started getting my entrepreneur hat on when I left New York City and moved to Nashville. So I've been here for 9 years. And I started to become friends also with a lot of entrepreneurs. So two of my really good friends are the girls of the Home Edit. When there are these two girls around my age, they decided to start this company that's taken off. I think they have like 6 million followers. They have a Netflix series, a podcast. They called me one day and they're like, Laurel, can we reorganize your house? And I was like, okay, sure. And I started to follow them and see their journey of how fast they were growing and how they started getting this following. And it was Joanna, who I was talking to, who's one of the founders of the Home Edit. She's Laurel. Don't think about it. Just do it. Like, you have this idea, you just got to do it. Because if you start to think too much, you're going to not do it. And she's right. Because if I knew what I know now, I probably wouldn't have done it, but I'm so glad I did it.
That is definitely the running theme. I can relate. And I feel like every entrepreneurista who we speak to can relate. Like, entrepreneurship is so rewarding. And I feel like I'm unemployable. Like, I can't go work anywhere else. I can only, you know, do stuff for myself, but it is so hard. And there's so many challenges and learning lessons, but it's the most rewarding thing ever. But it's helpful to all learn from each other, so we don't all have to make all of the same mistakes. So now, okay, you have this idea. Now you jump in, you just get started. What were some of those first things that you did? Like, day one, had you already quit your job?
Well, my philosophy is not to quit your day job until you get to a place where you feel. But for me, since my husband started being an entrepreneur much earlier than me, and I kind of kept on to corporate, we then kind of changed roles where he was in a much more stable place. And I really needed to get the green light from him, where I told him, I said, look, I was on maternity leave and I knew that I wasn't happy where I was. I need to change. And I said, look, you know, I really want to start this and be an entrepreneur, and it may go nowhere. And I need you to know that it's a risk, and I need you to green light this. And he did. He's like, I have your back, and I want you to do this and see where it goes. And let's just take it, you know, like, see how the first year goes. And that kind of gave me the confidence to say, okay, I'm going to do this. And if I fail, at least I know that I tried my hardest and it's going to be okay. So that's kind of where I started. I had no idea. I thought, oh, I've been at corporate. I have worked on these $100 million ad spend brands. I can do it. But when you're an entrepreneur, you're seeing all these different facets that you're not a part of if you're working for a big company. So, like, I was just on the media strategy advertising side. I didn't see the finance side. I wasn't part of the R&D, the packaging, the naming. I wasn't part of the recalls. Like, if there was a recall, I didn't care. It wasn't my problem. If there was budget cuts or this or that or a PR nightmare, it didn't affect me the same way that it very personally affects me now if those things happen. And the truth is, you know, we have grown significantly over the past few years. And the more you grow, the more things that you don't expect start to happen, where, you know, all of a sudden people see you and like, oh, you know, can I take advantage of this brand or whatever the case is? Or you do a run, or you find out that something with your inventory or your ingredients, like, didn't go as planned, and you have the insurance to back that, you know, all these different things that I'm still very much learning along the way.
It's definitely a learn on the job type of role as a business owner, for sure, but helpful to surround yourself with others who have done it and can share some learning. So what were some of the things when you first started that you didn't know or didn't go well because you maybe didn't have that information, and what did you learn?
I didn't know the retailer angle. I didn't know about distributors. In my head, I thought, oh, we're going to launch this brand in like February, and we'll be in like every single Whole Foods by April. And I was very wrong. We're actually still not in Whole Foods. So we're hoping to be considered for 2024.
Let's send this episode to them. Whole Foods, I would love for you to be in Whole Foods, actually, because that's where I go. And it would be very easy to get your products when I go. So,
yes. So we'll send some feng shui juju their way so they can. So anyway, I only knew marketing. I just thought, oh, this is a great brand. We vetted a bunch of packaging design companies. We ended up going with Pulp and Wire. They're up in Maine. They do a lot of brands in the CPG space. They're great. And they designed our bags. They helped us find a printer to print the first run of bags. And we did a lot of R&D here in Nashville, but our co-packer is actually in Connecticut. So we did the first run with them right before COVID hit. So we did the first run with them in February. And I remember a lot of people saying, when you do a first run, you need to be at the co-packer. Like, you need to be there. And the person who was running this at the time, who's no longer there, he was a jerk. And he said, no, you can't be here. You cannot be here for the run. We're going to do it. And they did the run and they did it wrong. And we got the pallet to our warehouse in Nashville. We're so excited. And I opened up the product and I said, our whole thing of what we lean into is being crunchy. And there was no crunch. And I was devastated. And back then, you know, now I see, oh, it was just a palette. We've had much bigger issues since then with things. But at the time, it was devastating. And I have my co-founder, Dan. We're very much opposites in many ways that balance us out. And he has this very calm demeanor. And for him, he was like, it's going to be okay. Like, we're going to deal with this. We're going to figure it out. We're going to demand to fly up there. And that's exactly what we did. I got in an airplane. We did the next run right before lockdown happened. I mean, we're talking about March 2020. And I was with them and I took them through the process about how to do the soak, sprout, dehydrate process properly. And it was successful the second time around. But these are things that you don't plan for. And now it's like, no way. You can't just, we do small batch runs with them. They ship them to us. We test out the small batch runs. We have a lab that's testing everything. We're much more diligent than obviously when we first launched, but you're learning things as you go along.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know when you just get started, but helpful to hear that. So for anyone thinking about starting a food business or any business where you have a co-packer or another place that's manufacturing products for you, insist that you go there and smaller run. So definitely good tips, Laurel.
Yes. Thank you.
So take me back to March 2020. Now the world shuts down and you have now just started this business. What did you do? Did you have to pivot the business or change plans based on what was going on?
We thought we were going to get into these retailers, 1, 2, 3. I remember we had a contact at Kroger and the buyer there said to us, if you're not milk or toilet paper, do not email us again. Like, we are not interested in new brands. We're dealing with a pandemic and new brands are not going to be considered. I don't care who you are, what you are. We don't care. And it was at that point that we realized we really need to pivot our strategy. And that's where we immediately went on to Amazon. And we started to think out of the box. We were in the Pop Sugar must-have it box that summer. And we really leaned into taking a step back and saying, okay, we launched this, but there's so much more that we can learn about targeting, insights, marketing, our branding. And we really used this time to focus on that while also going into hotels, we got into some airports, really trying to think of, okay, brick and mortar is not the end all be all. And we really need to think of other ways that this is going to work. But it was KeHE, which is one of the largest natural channel distributors, who in 2020 started the KeHE Elevate program. And we're one of the first 6 brands that they brought into the program. And they believed in us. And that really helped us. I have to say another thing, Steph, was sometimes you have to think out of the box and you have to work in real time, especially as an entrepreneur. So that September of March 2020 was the Expo East, and they decided to go virtual. And I took full advantage of this, where I stayed up one night until 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was just emailing people in their directory, because all of a sudden they gave you access to all of these buyers, publicists, and I just emailed them all. And from that Expo, we are now in 3,000 CVS Fuel Up the Healthy Snack Set because of that. And also, the next day in September 2020, we got an email from some woman at Hearst. And we had an intern at the time who was also a dietitian. And I said, her name was Deneen. I said, Deneen, let's just get on the call with her. It's probably going to lead nowhere, but you never know. And we got on the call with her. We told her whole story. And then we said, okay, what do you do at Hearst? And she's like, actually, I am the Good Housekeeping Institute's like head person who decides what the snacks are. I love your story. Send me product. And if your product sounds as good as you're making it sound, I'm putting you in the Good Housekeeping Best Snack Award next month. And we were like, oh my God, we really leaned into press that year and just where we couldn't, we just had to think outside the box.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that. I just got the chills hearing that story. A few months ago, I was over at the Breakers in Palm Beach and I saw Daily Crunch there. And I got so excited. Like anytime I see an entrepreneur's product in the wild, I get so excited because I know like what went into the process of getting there. And it's not easy. And it's staying up till 3 a.m. and finding this whole list and going after it before everyone else gets it. But it's so amazing all you've done so fast. And it sounds like you've done a lot of things. I say like, just get in there and do it and be super scrappy and you never know what's going to happen. And if you don't reach out and try and just take that call, you don't know what's going to happen. Tell me about some of the most exciting wins that have happened over the past few years.
My motto on that is like the squeaky wheel gets what they want. Being an entrepreneurista, you have to follow up and you have to keep on following up. You're not going to get the door open on the first try. It's just how it goes. So be patient. If there's a retailer that you love that is passing on you this round, just be patient. So the first retailer to ever believe in us who greenlit us in 2020 was Meijer. And I think at the time, we were like, we are a natural, better for you, healthy snack. So, you know, we produce sprouted nut snacks and trail mix snacks. We're all about clean ingredients. And we wanted to lean into the natural channel. And with COVID and the pandemic, Meijer was the one to believe in us first. And even though Meijer wasn't necessarily the top of the funnel for us, we realized it didn't really matter. And Meijer is a massive retailer and they believed in us first. They put us in all of their stores and they were kind of the gift that kept on giving. So they put us in the superfood snack set in our 5 ounce bags and we're in all of the checkout lanes with our 1.5 ounce. I'm actually about to fly up to Michigan next month as I was invited to their Diversity Summit golf tournament that they have every year. We have just started a wonderful relationship with them, but it started with them believing in us first. So that was a huge win. Getting into Forbes, also our initial year that we launched, was a huge win. Brian Kateman, he started something called the Reducitarian for people to eat less meat. And he did a whole write-up about Sprouted and we were their feature brand in the article. That was massive. Being on Good Morning America was incredible. We sold out in record time and it was incredible. I have to say, this goes with so many of these wins. They start small, but they mean the most because it's these people who just believe in you first. There was this local grocery store in Nashville where we live that placed the first PO with us ever. They bought like 6 cases and it was like the best day when they believed in us and like, oh yeah, we'll play 6 cases. Now, like you can't buy, we don't have a minimum of 6 cases. You have to buy a lot more than that. But you know, you got to start somewhere. Oh, I was going to say some other really big win one of the most epic big wins the first year we launched was someone said, you know, just send a bunch of your product out to podcasts and influencers. And we sent samples and I sent a handwritten note to Hungry Girl. She has about 1 million email subscribers and I never heard back. But one Monday morning, I woke up and our marketing person said, oh my gosh, like we're totally sold out on Amazon. Something happened starting at 3 o'clock in this morning. Like what's going on? And Hungry Girl not only put us on her podcast, but she also put us in her newsletter of the top 3 snacks to get into your pantry ASAP. And it was just so exciting to have them believe in us on their podcast. They tried like 10 different products. They scored them 1 to 10. I think they gave us a 9.5, which was their highest ranking and it was just to have these people who are so much bigger than you believe in you makes you say, okay, I'm onto something. I'm going to keep on going.
That's amazing and congrats. And it's just so important to remember to always celebrate those wins and these great things that are happening because there's so many crazy things that happen every single day. I always say high highs, low lows, everything in between throughout a single day in the world of entrepreneurship and just being able to take a step back and be like, wow, like we did this and people love our product and it's all worth it, right?
Yeah. And I think even Steph, like you saying this also even reminds me because sometimes even for me as a founder, sometimes I focus so much on things that don't go as planned or like a retailer maybe we thought we were going to get into and then they pass on us that round or whatever it is. And then you focus on that and you don't see all the amazing wins around you.
How do you handle the disappointment? So when you're, you know, we were talking about Whole Foods and you haven't gotten to Whole Foods yet, and that's, you want to get in, but how have you handled like not getting to where you want to be yet and just keeping going?
There's a lot of perseverance. So I tried to get into Erewhon for the first 2.5 years, and it wasn't until last April that they approved us, and we're actually about to launch in there with our fourth SKU this upcoming week with our reformulated cacao and sea salt sprouted almonds. But you got to have a thick skin as an entrepreneur. And I think the first time around, these things happen are the hardest to deal with. And then you start to not get used to it, but realize, all right, this is a reality that everybody has to go through, that you're going to get some unexpected wins that you weren't planning for. And there are other things that maybe you thought were shoo-in that you didn't get. And a lot of the times they end up balancing themselves out. I had a situation this week, and I was like thinking about whether I should talk to you all about this or not, but I think it's important for the listeners to hear. We're now in about 5,000 doors across the country, and I'm in a lot of forums with other consumer packaged good groups. And this one group, they're all a lot bigger than me. And they have warned me. They said, Laurel, as Daily Crunch gets bigger, you're going to get people who also want to take advantage and want to try to sue you or say something that's bogus. And like, you're going to have to be ready for it because it's going to happen. And that did happen this week. We had someone who emailed, and I'm not going to go into too many details. It basically was like, you have 24 hours to pay for something. And if you don't pay for it, I'm going to go into social. And our insurance company said, this is bogus. We are not going to cover this because what this person is doing, we actually don't think is just to even have insurance cover it. Like, it's bogus. But the truth is like, that's why I have insurance. I didn't sign up to deal with these people. I don't want to handle it. So like, thank God I have insurance to handle these situations when they happen, because they're going to happen to all of us. And you just need to make sure that you're covered for when these things happen. You need to have insurance in case you get a bad batch and that batch has to go to waste and it's worth $50,000, because that happened to us too. You need to have insurance for when people have fraudulent claims, but they are, is it worth it to fight it or just to say, let insurance cover it? So I told insurance today, I said, even though you agree, even though you're saying that, you know, you want to reject this person's claim because it's not warranted, I think you should just, let's just do it, because it's not worth it. So I think that's where, as a founder, there's going to be a lot of things you didn't sign up for, but you have to be ready for, to protect yourself. Have a third party lab doing testing if you're a food. Have, you know, an R&D scientist. Make sure you have your certifications. Make sure you have insurance for all this stuff. And it will just help the path go smoother.
Thank you for sharing that. And I know it can be hard to share hard times or vulnerable moments. And Courtney and I have definitely been through really hard times as well that we have shared. And a lot, like as a founder, so many of these hard things that you go through can almost feel like traumatizing, because it's like, you're just trying to create this amazing product that everyone loves, and these bad apples are just want to come after you and like take, like these other founders were telling you, like take advantage of you. And it happens. And the best thing you said, you know, just be prepared, like plan on it happening and just have the steps, everything in place ready to go. So when it happens, you're like, oh, expected this, knew it was going to happen someday. Let's put this to work right now. And thank you for sharing that. And sorry you're going through that right now, because it's so annoying when you just want to execute on a great business. Now you have to deal with these issues.
I think it's really important to be transparent and real. I think sometimes people say to me like, oh my gosh, Laurel, you're on fire. Things are amazing. Everything's great. And I don't want to sugarcoat things that it's all the time like that, because it's not. And I also think that's why there's the entrepreneurista, like what you've created for people like me in all industries to have a platform to go to, a support group, a support system, that it's so imperative that you cannot do this alone, and you need to have a group to support you, to help you. When these things occur that are the first time and you've never dealt with them before, there's other people that have, and they can give you guidance and they can walk you through it.
Absolutely. It's why we started the podcast, why we created our Entrepreneurista community, because I say founders shouldn't let founders go at business alone. Like, let's do it together. We can do it faster, smarter, and just have that support that is so needed, because you need people to celebrate with when you have these amazing times, but you need people to go to when you need to quickly problem solve and figure out how to deal with stuff that is frustrating in business that we don't want to deal with, but it's unfortunately just going to happen. Up next, you'll hear Laurel's tips for putting together a presentation for major retail buyers. Laurel, I would love to hear about the process of getting into some of these stores. So a lot of our entrepreneuristas have created all different types of products, from food products to products they're trying to get into Target, and they're trying to get in touch with the buyers and put together these decks. What advice can you share about the process of putting together, you know, the materials that you need to be able to present to the buyers? And then what is that process like, and how do you get to them?
First of all, nobody sells a product better than the founder. So I really like to be at all possible calls that I can be a part of with buyers. Step one, you need to have a sell sheet and you need to have a retail deck ready to go. It's also really good to have a price list with all the specs. What is your wholesale pricing? What are the dimensions? What are the weights? What are the pallet configurations? Put that together, because once you get in, you're going to need this for everything. But you can either go direct, where you can reach out to the buyer directly. If you don't have their contact information, usually you can find it on places like LinkedIn. You can find it through communities like the Entrepreneurista community, and then you can reach out to them directly. You can go through a broker. So we work with Greenspoon, which is a wonderful broker company, and they cover us in 5 different regions, and they submit a lot of reviews for us. And you also want to start setting yourself up for success. So I'm in consumer packaged good foods. So I've joined a lot of programs that lean into that. So KeHE Elevates, Unify, which is another distributor for natural products. They have the Up Next program, which we're a part of as well. So this kind of just helps you, but you obviously don't want to just get into a distributor unless you have a big retailer to carry you in warehouses so you don't get discontinued. I have gotten a lot of accounts on my own. And again, that power of you being able to tell the story directly to the buyer, I think goes a long way. So for example, Thrive Market, I emailed the buyer and they passed on us the first time around. They said, you know, look, the category is cluttered. We don't know you that well. They're passing for now. And then I came up with an idea. I said, we have this incredible new flavor that's launching. It was our Nashville Hot Sprouted Almonds. And it was just a Good Food Awards finalist. And it was launching in November 2021. And after over a year of being rejected from Thrive, I emailed them. And I said, I know that we're going to do well with you. And I want to offer you a 60-day exclusive with this flavor if you let us in. And we jumped on a call. And on the call, they gave the verbal. They said, you're in. We're going to get you in. And they are now our top 5 retailer in the sales. Like, and we are growing with them tremendously, and we're just doing really well in there. But it took a bit to get in. So I think forming a relationship, also just start off with keeping it really short and sweet. Buyers are so busy, just like, hi, this is who I am. This is my brand. Can I send you samples? Like, just keep it short and sweet.
So helpful. And persistence, and staying organized with who you're talking to so you know where to follow up, which brings me to my next question. How do you stay organized? Do you have a CRM? Are there tools that you use in your business that have really helped you grow?
Well, as a team, we use monday.com. I have to admit, I was kind of like the last of my team to get on that bandwagon. And now I'm finally on it. I'm like, oh, it's great. It is just great with keeping you organized as a team and just keeping people on the team, especially myself, accountable of like, okay, these are the projects that I need to do this week. And these are the due dates I'm giving myself to do them. So it's really helpful. We use SPS for when we get our POs from our distributors, and it's just a really good system to keep everything organized. We also are right now implementing DEAR, which is an inventory tracker. Dan, who is my co-founder and COO, he is overseeing that process. So I'm not in the weeds on that, but it's been a long time coming, and we're really excited to help us for that to help us get more organized with our inventory tracking. Those are like the big three things that we use right now. But, you know, look, I'm an Excel lady. I love Excel. So,
yes, Excel is amazing tool. And we do everything in the Google Suite. So the shared sheets, it's definitely a lifesaver for sure. Tell me about your business partner. How did the two of you meet and decide to partner together?
Yeah, so it's actually three of us. Diane is my aunt through marriage, and she's the one who learned the sprouting process in India. She saw people soaking nuts overnight, and she took that a step further with her dehydration methods. We really lean into our crunch because when you soak an almond in water, it swells in size, creating this hollow center that gives the nut a texture difference to be super crunchy like a chip. And yes, we also shed phytic acid, making it much more nutrient dense, bioavailable. Anyway, Diane is my aunt and she is my co-founder. But Diane is very clear up front. And I think that's also something that if you're going to have a co-founder, you really have to have very clear roles and responsibilities up front. Where Diane was like, yes, I'll be your co-founder. This is the brand that, you know, I created our product, but I don't want to be an employee. I don't want to do day to day. I never want to get a salary. I just want to be like an ambassador. And that's really what she has been. But I also knew at that point that like I needed someone to run the day to day with me. And Dan Stevenson, I met through Entrepreneurs Organization here in Nashville, where he previously had a gourmet mac and cheese line that failed because his co-packer did some pretty not so great things. But he learned a lot from that. And he was just freelancing for emerging brands. And he was freelancing for us. And I just felt like I was like, wow, Dan needs to be our third co-founder. He has that ops experience and that retailer and finance that would balance everything that I have, that I think we can really grow this together. And I approached Dan and he accepted as the third co-founder. So it's the three of us that launched in March 2020.
How big is your team now?
We aren't that big of a team. We have an Amazon agency. We have a social agency. We have an incredible accounting agency. We have a broker company. But as far as full-time employees, it's really three of us. And we have two people who work 50% FTE, who is a salesperson and an ops person. But we're about to onboard a field marketing person on our team. And we just hired someone part-time for our data to help us with our data.
I'm glad you shared that because I think that a lot of people will see these brands and be like, oh my God, there must be 500 people working there to accomplish everything. And there's so much that can be done when you're first launching your business in those first few years by working with freelancers and agencies and experts and consultants to really help you figure out like what is exactly needed. Because the second you start going and hiring all of these full-time employees, like you can really get stuck. If you have an agency or a freelancer, you can, you know, feel it out, see if it's the right fit for the business. You know, they say they're experts in what they do. And if it's a good fit, great. And if it's not, and you have to let them go, you're not, you know, stuck with 10 brand new employees in the business.
And one thing we also leaned into, and we still do, is our office is near Vanderbilt University. And we've had about 8 MBA interns so far, and they've been incredible. So passionate, so invested. Our summer MBA intern is starting next week, and we're really excited to have her join the team. She's going to be more of an ops role, but we actually had 2 MBA interns who stayed on with us for 2 years while she was trying to find the right job for her in New York City. So while they weren't technically full-time employees, they acted in that role and really helped us grow to where we are now.
That's awesome. And great advice to reach out to universities, local universities, because there are incredibly talented students who are looking for that experience. And they also have a lot of knowledge that they can share with startup companies. So such a great tip there. Coming up, you'll hear how Laura landed new CPG investors in her latest round. Laurel, how did you go about funding the business and how did you figure out how much money you would need to just start?
Yeah, well, for us, I think that's where initially Diane, my third co-founder, very much played the role of like, yes, I want to be the third co-founder, but I don't want to do a day-to-day. So she, I'd say the first 2 years we were self-funded and a lot of that was Diane. And it wasn't until the fall of 2021 that we did a seed round with friends and family. We're currently doing a bridge round right now. We're about halfway closed. We're raising $1.8 million. But you know, you have to be really strategic with raising money. I'm learning along the way. The economy obviously plays a large part in this too. When we did our seed round, I think we raised $1.2 million in like 5 weeks. I mean, it was... And our minimums were very high. And it's been much more difficult raising money in this economy. So for us, I think we realized, look, we grew a lot last year. We had a burn. And we completely pivoted our strategy saying, you know what? This raise is going to be slower than we anticipate. And we need to strategically change something. So we actually, in February, March, were profitable for the first time since we launched. And we're planning to try to stay on that trajectory of not just grow, burn, but more like, hey, we're in these great stores right now. Let's see how we could grow with them and not just grow stores and burn, because this raise is going to be taking a lot longer.
I think that's such great advice. And, you know, we're talking to a lot of founders about this right now because it is tough times to be able to get money. And you can't say no to a profitable business. So if you're running a profitable business that's making money, you are in a much better position and you want to, like, you need to stay alive. You can't have a business go under, especially during these times. So definitely great advice there. Any other learning lessons you want to share just about the fundraising process in general for someone who might be thinking about going out to raise now?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to really, first of all, think, do you want friends and family? For me, I only had friends and family in who I was very transparent with them about the risks involved. Look, the reality is that we are a high risk company and all emerging brands are high risk. They just are. And it's very important that you have that conversation up front if it's someone that you know. And I think for me, if I thought that they were, you know, using their retirement fund to invest in us, I would not be okay with that. So I think you really have to understand friends and family and have a very upfront conversation with them about the risks involved. That's stage one. I think stage two is that you need to tell people that you're raising. Post it on LinkedIn. Tell your friends and family if they know anybody who is interested in investing. Make sure you start a minimum. Make sure you know, we're doing a safe note, which a lot of brands typically do in seed round. But that also turns off VCs because they don't really want a safe note. They're not interested in that. So I think there's just a lot of different dynamics that you as a founder need to think about. Because once you let friends and family in, are they going to comment every time you're with them at a dinner party about the company when you don't want to talk about it? So, and I'm not saying that happens to me, but I just think that you really have to think things through before you take people's money. I feel much more comfortable taking investors who invest in a lot of brands, and they know that 9 out of 10 of them are going to fail, and they're banking on that one to override all the rest. And while I want to be that one, I'm going to try my damn hardest to do that. They know the risks involved, and they're used to doing this. So a lot of our investors are people who invest in a lot of brands. I do have to say that, you know, we went the angle of finding investors who were in CPG. And I think that right now, investors in the CPG space are not as involved in investing or not as into investing as I found of people who typically invest, but not in the space. So a lot of our investors this round are people who don't typically invest in CPG.
So interesting. And remind me when we finish recording, I actually have someone, now that you're talking about it, who I can introduce you to. So we could that's why it's good to put it out there and tell everyone when you're raising and still raising, because you never know who people can connect you to. So
I'm Laurel Orley on LinkedIn. You can find me and message me there if you know anybody who may be interested in closing our round.
Amazing. Yes. Put it out there. Well, I want to not that talking about raising money isn't fun, but what's even more fun is actually enjoying products. And you were so kind to send me your new
dill pickle.
I was like, okay, I'm going to wait until we record this episode to try these. And I'm like, I can't sit and look at these for a week that they're sitting here. And I've already tasted them and I'm going to have another one again.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Because of Expo West, we met with Cleveland Kitchen, who we are actually now collaborating with on this flavor. And we're sourcing all of our pickle juice and sliced pickles from them. They're dilly garlic pickles. The new bags, these are just kind of the R&D bags, have their logo on it and have much more splashier visuals. They're also going to be upcycled certified. The sliced pickles, we're calling them pickle bombs in the bags, are like next level. But we're also in conversations with a lot of pickleball companies to do a lot of exciting partnerships. And I think this also, Steph, goes back to investments. Like, investors want to get excited about your brand and they want to know what is going on the next 6 months. And for us, we have some really exciting things that we're working on behind the scenes with launching this flavor. And my hope is that that will incentivize investors to come on knowing that this dill pickle is already getting so much press and it's not even launched yet.
Well, I can tell you ahead of time, and I mean, for our listeners, we're recording this episode in June right now before this is live, but I think this episode is going to be released in July. And hopefully, when you're listening to this right now, this will be on the shelves in stores. Go on Daily Crunch on their website and order it.
It will just be on our website.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, we decided to empower ourselves and not go retail for the summer, just on our website, dailycrunchsnacks.com, for the dill pickle. And then it's going to be on Amazon starting in September.
So how do you come up with new ideas for product innovation?
Well, okay. So Steph, it's so interesting because during Expo West, we came up with two flavors. It was the dill pickle and pepitas that Kenzie Steele, our head of marketing, came up with. She was like, dill pickle is trending. It's where it's at. It's on fire. And we started R&Ding it. I was actually not behind the dill pickle initially. I actually worked with our MBA intern last summer on a pomegranate rose flavor. Whole Foods came out that date honey is like a top 10 ingredient this year. So we had date honey and pistachios, rose petals, upcycled pomegranate seeds. And we tested out the sweet pomegranate rose flavor and the dill pickle Expo West. And people only cared about the dill pickle. And I think that shows that like you really can't work in a vacuum and you can't just think, oh, well, I love it, so everybody else is going to love it. You have to test it out with your consumer. So we think of flavors all the time and we talk it through. We test it out. I'm right now doing R&D with my I can't share this yet, but basically my crush brand of all crush brands. This is another woman-owned brand, has this product and we're trying to collaborate together and I'm having a really hard time making it work. So I am actually now going to be sourcing someone outside of Daily Crunch to work with me to try to make these products married to each other and taste really good. And I think we'll get there, but it's really hot right now to partner with other brands and try to, you know, rind unless you're evil. And, you know, it just, but again, you can't just work in a bubble of like, well, I love it, so everybody else will. And you have to test these flavors and soft launch it, maybe just on your website, test it there first. Don't just go retail first with these new flavors. You've got to test them out.
What is the process when you have an idea for a new flavor to actually go through the R&D process? And how long does that take?
Well, the step one process starts with me, where I have a commercial dehydrator and I just test it. I pop it in my dehydrator and I see how it tastes. And if I think it tastes good, then I go and share it with my team and have them just like try it. And then, you know, we kind of work out the kinks and then our co-packer does small batch runs for us. So they'll do a 150-pound run for us to test it out. Cause look, you can do small batches all day long, but it's going to scale up differently. It always does. It's not apples to apples. So we right now are doing 150-pound recipe batch for this dill pickle run in July for our co-packer. And they do that run, and then we try that run out and we work out any kinks with that. Hopefully, you know, there aren't any kinks or they're just really minimal. But if you do enough runs, like if we do enough small batch runs here in Nashville, usually the bigger batches with our co-packer end up being fine.
What is the craziest thing that's happened to you since launching your business?
Well, besides for this issue that I can't really talk about this week, the real biggest one, and the other one I already told you, where our initial palette wasn't crunchy and didn't work, the one that really got me was last July. Our co-packer said, we got these almonds from your almond farm, which we always source the same almonds from, and they taste funky, like something's not right. And we were like, what? And we did third-party tests. We did all the lab tests. Everything was coming out fine, but it indeed didn't taste right. And we were like, we can't sell this. And that was where I learned a really big, you know, you learn where our insurance only covered up to a certain amount of spoilage, and it didn't cover the full amount of, this was 22,000 pounds of almonds. And it was hard for me, but actually it was my forum. I'm in this forum and I cried to them for like an hour on the phone, and they all had stories to share, and they kind of walked me through how to handle this, and they saved me. They really did. And that's why I just say to everybody on this call, like listening on this podcast, that you cannot be a solo founder. You need to have a support groups. You need to be involved with the Entreprenista community, with your joint, make your own forum community that you speak to once a month, because these are going to happen. So when this happened, I initially thought, I can't do this. I have three kids. I have a dog and a husband. I didn't sign up for this. And it was my forum that said, okay, this is how you're going to lead this, and this is how you're going to deal with this, and this is how you're going to prevent this from never happening again. And that's exactly what I did. And knock on wood, everything's been fine since. So.
Oh my gosh. No, again, thank you for sharing that. It's so helpful to hear. And look, community is everything, and we're all here to help each other and share these stories. And hopefully now, by you sharing that, you have helped a lot of other entrepreneuristas not have to go through that and just learn, you know, what steps to take ahead of time, or if it does happen, they know what to do. So thank you for sharing that. Final question for you, Laurel. What does being an entrepreneurista mean to you?
Well, it kind of went into what I was going to say right now is the best part of this whole journey of being an entrepreneurista. Sincerely mean this. Are the beyond incredible women founders that I have met these past 3 years. And like, I think I'm going to cry. They are just new friends for life. I mean, like, it's going to be my son's bar mitzvah next year. And like, I'm going to be inviting a lot of them to the bar mitzvah in Nashville. Like, they're my friends now, my real friends. And they're just incredible human beings. And they're so passionate. And they have these incredible brands. And how we support each other, it has made everything worthwhile. It is one of the reasons why I continue on. And I'm so thankful for that community and all the people I haven't met yet, who I'm probably going to be meeting at trade shows later this year and whatnot. So that really is it.
Oh, thank you, Laurel, for sharing that. And I am so excited to continue to follow all of the incredible things that you're going to do, and excited for the launch of Dill Pickle Daily Crunch Snacks. So exciting. Where can everyone find you, follow you, for those that want to buy your products on your site or Amazon? How should they find you? Where should they head over to? And then we will be linking out to everything in the show notes below.
Yeah. So real quick, if you're trigger happy on your phone, we have our website, dailycrunchsnacks.com, Amazon, GoPuff, Thrive Market. If you go in our store locator on our website, you'll see that we're in Meijer, Hy-Vee, we're in 3000 CVS, Fuel Up and Goes, we're in the Erewhon, Bristol Markets, Raley's, Central Market. I'm blanking on a lot, all the Foxtrots. We just got into Mother's Market. We're on a lot of places on the West Coast. So if you are listening on the West Coast, you've probably seen us. We're not as prevalent in retail yet on the East Coast, because we've been very strategic about our growth. Anyway, there's a place to get us and get crunching with us. So
Amazing. And again, we're linking out to everything in the show notes. So go head over to the show notes and click through the Daily Crunch Snacks and try it out. You will thank us later. So Laurel, thank you again for being here, sharing your story, all of your learning lessons. So, so helpful. I'm Stephanie, and this is the best business meeting I've ever had. Hey, thanks for listening and leaving us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'd love to stay in touch with each of you. You can listen to all of our latest episodes at entrepreneurista.com and connect with us on Instagram at entrepreneuristas. We'd also love to invite you to join the Entrepreneurista League, our private membership community for trailblazing women. You can head over to entrepreneurista.com/the league. We'll see you there. Wishing you a productive week ahead.